Hello and welcome to this week's episode of Banter on the Parkway. I am your host, Brian, from BannersOnTheParkway.com. And we are coming to you between the first weekend and the Sweet 16. The transfer portal has been portaling. Basketball has been being played. We are here to talk about it. So I am joined, as always, by Brad. Brad, I mean, with the knee injury, are you kind of waiting to see what the portal produces before you throw your name in the hat?
Yeah, it makes things a little more difficult. Nobody really wants to take a chance on a guy in his 40s with an injured knee. I do still have eligibility left, but it's gonna depend. I'm waiting to see what happens down in Louisville. I might be able to play there.
Yeah, you would have to have a coach there to recruit you first. Are you thinking player coach?
Yeah, maybe I'll just go be the coach.
I was going to say, like a Lou Boudreau kind of thing. I'm sure that reference plays given that Lou Boudreau retired in like 1950. We're also joined by Braden. Braden, do you have any earthly concept of who Lou Boudreau is?
Yeah.
Okay.
He was a baseball player back in the day, I believe, the 1920s. Is that accurate?
Not accurate. Well, I mean, he was alive then. So I'm sure he dabbled.
I knew it was the 1900s. I have a great ear.
he was a player manager. One of the last player managers. Frank Robinson was briefly a player manager in Cleveland. Shout out to Frank Robinson. Anyway, so Xavier was in action last week. I mean, we all know how that went. It was Georgia 78, Xavier 76. This was a game where Xavier went down huge and then battled back. Brad, was this basically just the story of Xavier's season retold over 40 minutes? They dug themselves too deep of a hole. They valiantly tried to fight their way out of it. And then at the end, something weird and inexplicable happened and everything fell apart.
Yeah. That's a pretty good way to put it. Xavier went on a huge, huge run late. The kind of which usually leads to a win. But it didn't this time. Usually when you rip off a 34-13 run, you're going to be in good shape. But Xavier had dug themselves such an enormous hole by looking. You know, people talk about, oh, they don't look like they're into it, or, oh, they don't care enough. I think this was probably the first time all year Xavier actually did look kind of disinterested until, I don't know, 10 minutes left to play, 11 minutes left to play. They all of a sudden decided that they were going to start beating a team that was way worse than them. By then it was too late. Once again, Des Claude did all of the heavy lifting to get the team back into it. I guess he didn't miss a shot at the buzzer this time, so that's some improvement. But I'm not sure not getting one off was actually the best way to go. Really weird play at the end. There was a lot of contact that was either right at the buzzer or just after the buzzer. Dez didn't get a shot up, which means I believe that's the third game this year the game has functionally ended with the ball in his hands. Either with a missed shot or no shot. And that was that. David didn't necessarily go quiet into that good night, but they went into it and I guess things have probably happened in the NIT since then, but I've paid zero attention to that.
I did see UC lost. That is the only thing I was paying attention to in the NIT. I think Seton Hall's still playing, so good on them. Cincinnati losing, always funny. I don't care that they made it further than us. While watching this game, I was typing up my region preview for the blog and got so frustrated, I just stopped paying attention to the game. I looked up, and all of a sudden, we were down 5 points. If X was still playing in this, I'm pretty sure we'd all be like we were a couple years ago. We'd be all aboard the nationally invited bandwagon, but we didn't. And honestly, now I can say that I never cared that this team hurt me so much. And then to just dangle that last one right in front of my face and then rip it away, that was about par for them. But I think the best thing to come out of this game, two things, Des Claude. Apparently now is Ray Allen. So when he comes back next year and makes 5 of every 6 threes he attempts, don't be surprised. And, gave us the chance, for Quincy Oliveri to break the all-time 3-point record at Xavier. He broke Craybon Blewett's record from his senior year. So I thought that was cool. Gave Quincy a chance to get one more game out there, gave kind of a fair shot at that record. And I'm just genuinely impressed because I knew Quincy was having a good season, and until I think a couple games left when Paul Frichtner tweeted it out, I did not realize he was closing in on that many made threes for a season. So good on Quincy. He had a lot of big moments this year, but putting his name in that record book is something that will definitely kind of cement his legacy in his 1 year at X.
Yeah, I think there were a lot of scalding hot takes on Twitter after this game about Des Claude, and they all seemed to ignore the fact that he almost single-handedly willed Xavier back into this game, and focused more on the fact that when he got the ball with 1.2 seconds left, he didn't immediately score it. But, I mean, Xavier was well out of this game until he really asserted himself and brought them back. So there was also that weird goaltend, not a goaltend thing with, during the final possession, which I thought was odd. And probably mattered. Xavier did get the offensive rebound off the miscalled goaltend, but, you know, it's, them's the breaks. And the season ended in a strange manner, but a lot of the season went in a strange manner. So I can't say I was surprised. Anyway, looking at Xavier's, I guess, their roster, because the transfer portal did open the day before Xavier's game. So far, Xavier has 6 players in the portal. Cam Kraft has already committed to go to Miami of Ohio, which I don't think should be all that shocking. He originally committed to Xavier under Travis Steele. Now he follows him to Miami of Ohio. You then have Kachi Enzi, Sasha Shani, Yidish Namiksha, Abu Usman, Brad Colbert, and as of today, Logan Dunholm, who I honestly thought had stopped playing basketball. But anyway, so, I mean, looking at these names, Brad, I guess who is the biggest loss, in your opinion, for Xavier before we get into what Xavier should be looking at in the portal?
I think the biggest loss is probably, as weird as this is to say, given how frustrating he was this season, is probably Abu Usman, because he could have come back next year in the role that he should have been in this year. A 15-minute guy off the bench who comes in, blocks some shots, commits a whole bunch of fouls, and rebounds really well while Fremantle or Hunter gets a break. Now X won't have him in that role. You know, if you want to look away from the guy who is super frustrating, I'd say maybe Namiska, It was the biggest loss. He's a really polished offensive player, whose defense left a little to be desired at times, but, you know, he could go out there and get you some buckets. You know, Kachi Enzi, super raw. He might turn into a player. Sasha Chiani, laterally slow and physically weak, is I believe how Rick Pitino would have described Sasha Chiani. Had he been the one to recruit him and then put him on a roster and then complain about him the entire season. It's more, I think, of a Xavier has lost here in terms of depth, more quantity lost and quality loss, I think.
I'd actually say that I thought Kachi Enzi is the biggest loss here, just with the way he closed the season. I thought what he brought was a little bit of a Jerome Hunter kind of junkyard dog mentality. He got in there, he mixed it up, and if you're talking about a guy that's going to be, you know, filling in the front court next year with Frosty and Hunter on the bench, I think he's a guy that could have gotten in there, giving you solid minutes. Probably his offensive game needed a little more finesse to it, because every time he caught the ball, he was 100 miles an hour, and then he'd throw the ball off the backboard at roughly 100 miles an hour. But I loved him. He was all hustle, all heart, all the time. I was honestly kind of bummed to see him in the portal. I thought Chiani had some potential as well. He showed flashes of being really good, being able to do some pretty good things. But honestly, the biggest culture loss here is Brad Colbert. If you listen to the Sean Miller podcast, there was an episode with him and the transfers on. He talked about trying to, you know, go to a D2 and, you know, have a season where he's actually one of the big name players. So I think that's probably what he's getting himself into. I say good for him. I think he can go to a Division II, tear it up for a year before moving on from his college days. But I will miss that divine mullet down on the sidelines.
And a 203 offensive efficiency. I mean, come on.
I mean, yeah, the dude, his first three, I mean, you come off a screen and just bang one. Like, I feel like he glared at the bench just like, this is what you're missing out on, Sean. Come on. Give me my respect.
Oh, yeah. I think Enzi, to me, showed a lot of upside, and I'd have liked to see how that played out. But I felt like through the course of the season, all three of Usman, Namicha, and Johnny kind of faded. I thought they all started looking much more promising than they ended up being. I'm kind of a mind with Brad here. Xavier has lost some depth, but I don't know that they, especially with Fremantle and Hunter back next season and Sean Miller having received assurances from God that they won't be injured, I'm just not sure how many of those guys are really needed. That being said, Xavier now has one returning big man on the roster. That's Lazar Djokovic. And so if he stays, I think there is probably a slot for one more person to come in there, and we'll get to that in a minute. But, you know, it's a lot of names, but I don't know that it's panic time right now. You know, Xavier, hit the red button, bring back Travis Steele, the whole thing. Let's burn it all to the ground. Anyway, there was a NCAA tournament going on this past weekend. We were all together for that. And some of you guys' takes, I got to tell you in person, were stupid rather than making fun of you online. So that was fun for me. Probably not as much for you. But, Braden, I guess we're going to just look rapid fire here. Three national championship winning coaches got knocked out in the first weekend. well, more than three, but out of these three who have kind of struggled lately, who would you say is the most washed? I'm giving you Tom Izzo. Michigan State won their first round game and then got bounced by North Carolina pretty comfortably. John Calipari, obviously another first round exit for him at the University of Kentucky. Bill Self, he is bounced for the second year in a row in the first weekend, pretty handily, the second largest margin of defeat in the NCAA tournament ever for Kansas. The other one being 3 years ago, when they got beat by USC in the first weekend. So, who are you going with? Who is the most washed? Who is the most washed? Who do you think can make it back to the mountaintop?
I will say Bill Self should have gotten knocked out in the first round. Samford has released a shirt that said all in and all ball. And it's a picture of that very clean block their boy put on. I think the most washed is John Calipari. He's out of his depth now, in the era of NIL where everybody can pay their players all the time. He's a big brand there at Kentucky. They've not actually done a whole lot in the last few years, except get a high seed and get bounced early. Which don't get me wrong, it's hilarious. So if he keeps it up, I'm completely fine with that. I personally think, though, he needs to get the heck out of the lobby at this point. Pack it in while you're not ahead. Who gets back to the mountaintop? I'd say probably Bill Self. I don't know. Tom Izzo said he's going to get back to a deep run, even if it kills him. And no disrespect to old Tom. Sometimes when he's on the sideline, he looks like it genuinely might kill him. He just gets so irate down there, and he's getting older. I kind of like Tom Izzo's teams. But you know, take care of yourself, man. It's just basketball. Like, it's not that serious, but I mean, Kansas is essentially a machine. This year they had 5.5 good players at their best, and then their best player got hurt, and Hunter Dickinson, who I don't like in the slightest, also got hurt and was playing banged up in the tournament. But Kansas is just a machine. They'll be back to the mountaintop soon enough, or they'll go back to doing the Bill Self patented early exit every year, which is also still funny. So that's what I got out of those three. Tom Izzo might die on the sideline. John Calipari's out of his depth. Bill Self, Natty 2025, mark it now.
Okay. Never mind. Yeah, part of the reason for Kansas's lack of depth is because Arterio Morris was arrested during the preseason and they kicked him off the team.
What a novel idea.
Right. No segue here. Illinois is in the Sweet 16, Brad. Interesting. Those two things have nothing to do with one another, I've been assured by Illinois fans and literally no one else. Anyway, Oklahoma, they got left out. Oakland versus Kentucky was a fantastic game. Was it your game of the first weekend, Brad, or do you have something else to throw out there?
I think storyline-wise, yeah, it's hard not to love a game in which the main feature, I guess, is a dude who literally doesn't shoot two-pointers. Golkey was 10 of 20 from the field, 10 of 20 from behind the arc. He did throw in two rebounds for good measure. Other than that, 35 minutes, 32 points, and no other stats. Went almost full Allen Houston out there. That was, I think that was probably the most personally satisfying game for me because everybody loves to watch UK lose. John Calipari had a meeting with Mitch Barnhart last night, and they came out and said that he will be back for a 16th year at Kentucky, so they'll lose in the first or second round again next year. I think Colorado-Florida might have been the best game of the first round. Just an absolute barn burner. And it ended right at the buzzer with a buzzer beater, 102 to 100. I like to see college basketball games getting back to being high scoring. Since some of my earliest memories are that Loyola team with Bo Kimble and Hank Gathers that would try to score 150. I was just looking at our preview that we put out. We did a pretty good job picking good games. We picked that Oregon to South Carolina was a potential for an upset. Clemson, New Mexico would be a good game. That Florida, Colorado would be a good one, and Washington State would be, and Drake would be a good one. We did a lot better there than we did with some of our Sweet 16 picks, which we won't go into. Also, I don't know who wrote the South preview. It might have been you, Bri. Mentioned Wade Taylor as a guy to watch. It could, if it wasn't you, it was probably Joel. Wade Taylor really did make himself a guy to watch. In their second round game, I got home the next night, and you know, the Aggies pushed Houston into overtime, and my daughter, who God love her, is not much of a basketball aficionado, really good soccer player, said, yeah, number four for Texas A&M had a great game. He made some big shots. Wade Taylor the fourth went 5 of 26 from the floor.
Heck
did
yes.
Did not let the fact that he couldn't hit water if he fell out of a boat stop him from shooting. When it comes to players to watch, you got to love a guy who takes 26 shots to score 21 points. Other than the second day where it kind of fizzled out, there are a lot of not really close games late. The tournament always delivers. It was fun to watch for a couple games or a couple days with you guys, and then fun to listen to when I got back at work and streamed it off of Westwood One's website, because there is no app that you don't have to pay for where you can just stream the audio of the NCAA tournament, because the NCAA is like that about things. The Varsity Network app used to do it, and it's not working real well. So since I didn't think they would want me to go ahead.
Boomer, maybe you should download the March Madness Live app, because you can absolutely stream the audio through that.
All I was getting was the option for video, and I don't want to watch the games.
No, because I listened to Dayton come all the way back only to throw the game away against Arizona in hilarious fashion. The announcers didn't laugh as much as I was hoping they would, but it was still funny. Yeah, so Boomer, maybe check out all the features of an app before you get on your soapbox about the NCAA again.
Hey, I did find a way to listen to them, and I got to hear Kevin Harlan calling games, which is always fun. And maybe I'll give the app a shot here to listen to the Sweet 16 tomorrow night.
Brad, is that the area of our podcast? Just completely out of his depth here.
Yeah.
Can we kick him off?
Brad, I mean, how badly do you think that the transfer portal and NIL have ruined college basketball? They're getting a free education, so isn't that value enough? Brad, go ahead.
Don't tar me with that brush. I might be old and maybe slightly less technologically apt than you guys are, but I haven't descended into full boomerism yet. I'm going to wait. I'm sure here in about 10 years, they'll change another baseball rule. And that'll probably do it for me. They'll probably send me full off into sitting on my porch yelling at people to get off my lawn. And back in my day, the pitchers used to have to hit and all that garbage.
Just make sure that you mute your microphone when the doorbell rings for the FedEx man to deliver your white ASICs. And that way, you know, it doesn't come through on the podcast audio. So, Brayden, do you have any more jokes at Brad's expense because of how much of a boomer he is, or are we going to move on?
We can move on. I'll talk about my favorite parts of the opening weekend. Got a few games to talk about. One was that Grand Canyon beating St. Mary's. I was very happy because I picked this one. It made me look kind of smart. I get to watch a lot of games from out west throughout the season. I've been tracking Ty and Grant Foster who they just called Grant Foster on the broadcast, and for about a month, I thought his name was just Grant Foster, and was really confused why he had his first name printed on the back of his jersey. No, he's got two last names. He's that good. But he's got a pretty remarkable story. Played at Kansas, or was on the team at Kansas. He didn't play a whole lot. Transferred to DePaul, and it quite literally nearly killed him. He collapsed in the locker room, had to have, I believe it was two open heart surgeries. This was his comeback season. And then he, I don't know so much that he carried, but he kind of carried Grand Canyon to a victory. Went for 22 points, you know, got his big national moment. He's a lot of fun to watch. That was a fun game. Bryce Drew coaching him. The other Drew brother, as he's known nowadays. It was a fun game. I didn't have a lot of faith in St. Mary's. I thought Grand Canyon could spring the upset. They did. It was a fun game to watch. They got control of it, and then they closed it out with some great efficiency. I thought another compelling game / storyline was Oregon and Creighton in the second round. Oregon, if you thought Wade Taylor was a gunner, which, by the way, Brad, I wrote that article, so, you know, thanks for tap dancing around everyone except for me. I can actually write. Jermaine Cousinard, he didn't necessarily come into the tournament on a heater. That had been his big man in Folly Dante, who ran the Pac-12 tournament. But Cousinard dropped 40 on the Gamecocks in the opening round, attempting a very modest 22 shots to get there. And then against Creighton, he shot 33 times for 32 points. Some of those late in the game were kind of desperation when Creighton separated in double overtime. But he was clinical through regulation and the first OT. A lot of fun to watch. They just kept running a high pick and roll. And Folly Dante kind of sunned Ryan Kalkbrenner when he got him down low. Which is fun to watch, in my opinion. But, man, Cousinard, he went for 72 points across two games in the tournament. He's been in college for just about forever. So him getting his big tournament run, having a couple solid performances, he was a lot of fun to watch. He hit some big shots. Then the hypothetical that I wanted to see was Eddie Lampkin and DJ Burns play each other, because I don't know if the hardwood could have contained the 500 pounds of man that were standing on top of it down in the low post. That had just been poetry in motion. You talk about thick boys. Those guys are my starting thick front court. DJ Burns is like a chubbier Nikola Jokic. And Eddie Lampkin, I don't even know how to describe his game. It's mesmerizing. Eddie Lampkin had a couple solid games. Unfortunately, they weren't able to spring the upset on Marquette. But that was a matchup I really wanted to see, because I thought that post-battle might have started an earthquake.
To hop back to that Oregon-Creighton game, we've talked before about how I think we all agree that McDermott's a good coach. And that high pick and roll was killing Creighton until he started doubling Cousinard coming out of that and taking a with Kalkbrenner. So that took away his look back to Enfali Dante, and that ended up making the difference in that game. It was a good on-the-fly coaching switch-up that tipped that game in Creighton's favor. I don't know how, but Creighton looked fresher in the second overtime, despite the fact that Shireman, Kalkbrenner, and Alexander – had all played the entire game. Those two just must be in crazy shape.
I think another great coaching switch was when they got to double OT, he ran the make shots offense for them. Steven Ashworth, your boy, man, I know you guys hate Baylor Shireman. I was cheering for Creighton. I couldn't stand Steven Ashworth. He hit a three, Kalkbrenner. Good on him. He hit his 1-3 of the game, and then Jason Green dunked back a miss. I don't know how much coaching that was, but a nice 8-0 run to start double OT when the other team was running on fumes. You know, heavy stuff from McDermott right there, where he told them, hey, guys, when you're shooting it, maybe stop chucking it off the rim and get it to go through the net.
Ashworth also hit the side of the backboard with a three, so not all of his hit the rim and missed.
Baylor Shireman also, my dude, big late game heroics there to send that game to OT. I know you guys loved it, that he's growing the mullet back out. He's got that. Brad's rolling his eyes. Great. He's got that old man at the YMCA game, and I'll tell you, when he pulls, it is wet. You know it's in.
We did actually run a poll, which Creighton player do you sports hate more? Steven Ashworth won that in a landslide, 73.4% to 26.6% over Baylor Shireman. So it just goes to show that Brad is wrong most of the time, if not all the time.
I think it was the 50 burner accounts I made for that poll that might have skewed the results slightly. I was like, my dude cannot lose this.
I don't think it is. I think it's probably just the way Steven Ashworth chooses to conduct himself on a basketball court. I know who I voted for.
You mean the big
name is Steven Ashworth? I don't.
Award winner this year?
Anyway. So, yeah, I actually thought probably my favorite game of the first weekend came on day two. First game of day two was Northwestern versus FAU. I didn't think Northwestern deserved a 9 seed, but I didn't think FAU deserved to be in the tournament. So it was an interesting matchup there, and it was a pretty wild ending because Northwestern scored to tie the game with, like, 8 seconds left, and FAU's – Janelle Davis, who I started disliking last year during their run because he just, I don't know. There's just something about him I found really annoying. Decided to walk the ball up and chuck from like 35 feet. And they had a timeout left. And Dusty May, already counting his fat stacks, just went ahead and decided, you know what, I'm going to see how this plays out. And it played out about how a 35-foot jumper that a guy jumps off of his shooting foot to shoot does. I mean, it wasn't like an air ball makes it seem like it was online and just fell like a couple feet short. I mean, that thing, he didn't even have like the right compass, you know, like he should have been shooting north and he shot like north, northeast. You know, it was way off. And then they lost in overtime. And it was a fantastic game. I like Chris Collins because he told the refs what I think more people should. So anyway, thought that was a fantastic game. But the coaching carousel is spinning. Probably most pertinent for Xavier is DePaul has made a rare good move. They fired Tony Stubblefield, which was a good move, but I thought, you know, they can still ruin this. Dave Lato part three would be hilarious and seemed likely. But instead, they went with former Ohio State coach Chris Holtman. So Chris Holtman had some success at Butler in the Big East, and he is now the head coach at DePaul. I mean, Brad, this is a pretty good hire, right? They're not probably going to go get Dusty May or whoever, you know, the hottest coaching commodities are. But Chris Holtman's had success, and he's a solid coach.
I think this is a really good hire. He got run out of Ohio State by the most obnoxious fan base in sports. This side of Kentucky, probably. But his worst year there was last year where they finished 49th in the KenPom. I mean, that's not bad at all. They did struggle in conference last year and then again this year before the Diebler, who didn't play there, took over. But I think he's a really, really good coach. I was concerned when he left Butler that he was going to turn Ohio State into a perpetual national title contender. He had really good teams there up until the last couple of years. This is a weirdly good move by DePaul. I'm a little surprised that Holtman didn't hold out for one of the other openings that was coming out. Because I think that if Well, I guess we might as well segue into whatever the heck Louisville's doing. I think that if Holtmann had held out for that job, he should have been the first and only name on their list. But they have decided to really go off script with this thing.
Yeah, so there have been pictures circulating, and, you know, it's on the internet, so I don't know if it's proven or whatever, but there have been pictures circulating that they were setting up for a press conference at the Yum Center. Most people seem to think that Louisville thought they had Dusty May. Dusty May, current Michigan head basketball coach as of late last week. So now Louisville is back to the drawing board. But I don't know what drawing board they are at, because the names that are coming out are not names I would associate with Louisville. They seem to have skipped a whole bunch of, like, they couldn't get Scott Drew, because of course you can't get Scott Drew. Like, no one can get Scott Drew. I don't know why you would ask at this point. You might as well call Izzo. But, they couldn't get Scott Drew. Apparently, you know, they made Brad Stevens and Jay Wright Stano. Obviously, that's where every coaching search starts right now. But, yeah, then they whiffed on Dusty May, who's, you know, the hottest commodity in basketball, and you knew somebody was going to pay him bonkers money this year. And now it's like their search is like Richard Pitino and Shaheen Holloway and Amir Abdur-Rahim and Pat Kelsey. And, like, I think those guys are, like, decent coaches. Amir Abdur-Rahim, I think, is probably one more year of taking a terrible team and making them a really good team away from getting a huge paycheck. But that's not who I would assume Louisville would be going for. Like, I would think they'd be going for established names, because they're a big brand, and it seems like they have skipped over that. When it said Pitino, I was like, oh man, a reunion, sort of made some sense to me. Kind of would have hated it, because I think he makes the Big East more entertaining, but then it was, no, it's the one that got run out of Minnesota because he couldn't win there, and then barely got New Mexico to the tournament this year, only to get stomped in the first round by Clemson, who I'm still convinced is not very good. So, Brad, I mean, you and I grew up with Denny Crum Louisville. They were one of the hugest brands in college basketball at that point, and I think that maintained through Rick Pitino. What the heck is going on there now, though?
It's getting more hilarious, and this literally just came out. Honestly, as you were talking, Richard Pitino has turned them down and will be staying at New Mexico. But wait, there's more. Rumor has it they're now talking to Bob Huggins. So, I don't know. We've talked about going off the rails. I think if you have Bob Huggins at the helm of your program, maybe just swerving off the road is a better analogy. But yeah, they are just, I don't know. You went Denny Crum, and, you know, maybe I didn't know well enough at my age, but I always felt like he was pretty classy. Rick Pitino won, maybe without being classy, but now they are just, it would be sad if it wasn't so immensely funny. But, I mean, they torpedoed themselves. I think Chris Mack is an excellent coach, and everything that went on, and we've covered it before, we don't need to get into it again, but with his departure there was just a travesty. And now I don't know, you know, when Richard Pitino tells you, nah, I think I'm going to stay here in New Mexico, and you're like, I don't know if Bob Huggins is, I saw somebody on Twitter just said that he can use his vehicle stipend for Uber rides since he's not allowed to drive. I have no idea. I have no possible idea. You know, it's Louisville. They should be able to get just about anybody, and it looks like they're going to end up pulling somebody from a low major and hoping for the best. And, you know, sometimes that works out, And, you know, you land an excellent coach, and sometimes that just means that you're going to repeat this cycle over and over. I guess their theory is it can't get worse, but who knows? Who knows? I mean, I think Pat Kelsey's a good coach, but I don't think he's Louisville level, or maybe he is Louis. Maybe Charleston to Louisville is a normal step now.
Be kind of a step.
Because, like, Patino had that 1 year at Minnesota where they got a good seed, and then everybody picked Middle Tennessee to beat them in the first round of the tournament because it was obvious Middle Tennessee was just going to annihilate them in the first round of the tournament, and then they did. But other than that, like, none of those guys have gotten none of them have gotten a higher seed in an NCAA tournament game. You know, Holloway had that incredible run at St. Peter's. Abdur Rahim, I mean, we got to watch up close and, you know, in horror through our fingers for like 35 minutes last year, what his Kennesaw State team could do. But man, I would think if I was Louisville, what I'd have done is tried to get John Calipari for maximum hilarity, because I don't think you're going to, I don't know. I don't think you're going to be more successful with the other guys they're talking about hiring than you would be with him. And it would be super funny. But anyway, yes or no, Braden, does it serve them right for treating Chris Mack so bad?
Yeah. Yeah, it does. Chris Mack's one of my five favorite bald people. And they shafted him. I won't tell you where he ranks because it probably hurt Brad's feelings.
You're also now bald. Do you rank yourself in your favorite bald people rankings?
Yeah, and I'm also behind Chris Mack. Sorry, Brad, there's a spoiler for you. You're behind him as well. No, I think Chris Mack is a phenomenal coach, despite what recent history may have suggested. And some people that wanted him out at Xavier, and then we made an Elite Eight. So, yeah, I that whole thing went down very badly for everyone involved. But, you know, he's enjoying his time going to his kids' sporting events and fishing and, you know, throwing $100 bills out the window on a whim. You know, I think he's enjoying life and possibly about to go coach Vanderbilt, which would be kind of fun. Kind of fun to see him back in the sideline. You're shaking your head now. Am I out of the loop on this one?
Yeah, they hired okay, Mark cool. Buying.
Jack's not Vanderbilt. You're not. You heard it here first.
Well, breaking news, folks.
He'll be at Vanderbilt for his daughter's volleyball games, so you know he'll be there. I was in the neighborhood. Chris Mack.
Breaking news.
For Mack, as of Louisville should hire Dino Claudio.
I don't think so.
I don't know if he can legally coach, but it would be really funny.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure actually he did get a show cause, so yeah, I don't think he can. But I mean, it's Louisville. Can you do any worse than they've been doing? But we're here to talk about Xavier. Kind of. I mean, we've talked about all kinds of other things. So the transfer portal, it's open. We've talked about who Xavier has lost to the portal so far, and it is still open for like 40 more days. So it's by no means a sure thing. Davion McKnight has said he's coming back, and I think it would be absolutely shocking if either of Jerome Hunter and Zach Fremantle went in the portal. So that leaves like four guys. That leaves Dez Claude, Lazar Jokovic, Trey Green, Daylon Swain, and then Reed Ducharme, who didn't play a lot this year. But that leaves those guys as kind of undecided. So with that all in mind, I guess first, can you kind of Brad, break down what the transfer portal is. We got this from BTDOL fan. If BTDOL, it's clear what it stands for. It's not clear to me, so sorry. But what kind of advanced scouting do coaches have on these players? Kind of seems like a maze to me. Can coaches suggest to players that they look elsewhere? That's something I think we saw a lot of with St. John's when Rick Pitino got there and cleared them out and then was like, no, wait, come back, AJ Store. whoops. Anyway, so our scholarship's basically a year-to-year thing. And, you know, is the portal just college basketball free agency? Is this making it harder for fans to create bonds with players that you get over 3 to 4 years, like we've seen a lot at Xavier?
I think to answer the first or the last one first, no, the portal is not free agency because you can transfer once without penalty. And then if you want to transfer again after that, you have to get some sort of dispensation from the NCAA unless it's your grad transfer year. So you could theoretically transfer twice without penalty. But if you know you're jumping freshman to sophomore, then sophomore to junior, you will have to sit a year. So it's not full-on free agency. And I think grad transfers should be able to transfer without a penalty. You know, I do think that there is some argument that it has made it a little more difficult for fans. You know, guys even just like our dad who tune in for the season and maybe can't follow as much during the off season, or guy, you know, just your more casual fan might have turned Xavier on at the start of this year and been like, who the heck are all of these guys? And you know, that's a fair thing. I will say that BTDOL fan one, Dolphin fan, I don't know, doesn't say it's a bad thing. I'm all for an open market, but it is a fair criticism that it makes it harder for fans. Advanced scouting, I think that it's safe to assume that coaches know pretty much everybody who's going to come out there. There's a wealth of information available just online, and you can find a ton of stuff on Synergy Sports if you're willing to pay for it. And coaches are well connected. They've got film on these guys from back in high school. And then to answer the last question, yeah, coaches definitely suggest to players that they look elsewhere. I think you see that with guys like Cam Kraft here. I think that Coach Miller was not so subtly suggesting to Yidish Namishka during his one interview during the season that maybe he should be well-served to look elsewhere if that was the level of effort he was going to put forth. That doesn't mean that scholarships are year to year, though. The scholarship, once it's given, has to be honored. So if the player's like, no, I'm staying here, the coach can't just yank the scholarship from him for no reason. You know, the player would have to go out and, I was going to say, commit a crime, but I guess we've seen that doesn't necessarily mean you lose your scholarship. But the player would have to do something to make himself ineligible for the scholarship for it to get taken. If Cam Kraft had said, thanks, I'm going to stay here and play 6 minutes a year for my last 2 years, there's not anything the school can really do about that. But players want to play. I think most coaches have these guys' best interest at heart. You know, to sit down and have an honest conversation with them and tell them, hey, you're really not in the plans here. That, you know, go somewhere where you can get more playing time. Because I think players want to get that time. Coaches don't want to have a guy eating up a scholarship who's not going to play. So it's mutually beneficial for them to communicate on things like that. I guess then talking about what X needs, here's an interesting name for you that's in the transfer portal right now and says he's had contact from Xavier is DJ Burns. At first I was like, whoa, this dude's getting lots of work done. But there's two DJ Burnses. And this one played for Youngstown State. Excellent rebounder, elite defensive rebounder, almost Enrique Freeman levels on the glass. Decent scorer, really efficient, likes to shoot the three more than he probably should, but he played for Youngstown State this year. He's got a year of eligibility left. Could be a good pickup for Xavier, and says he's already had contact from the team. So I think that's the first name, and I think, at least in my opinion, guys, I think where Xavier needs to add some depth is at that those post positions, because I don't think you can count on a full season from Fremantle or Hunter at this point.
No, I think you definitely need to add some depth there, but, you know, quality over quantity. Obviously, we've had a mass exodus of front court guys heading out. I thought any one of those guys could have played kind of that 15 minutes a game role, but you're going to need to find somebody who's probably willing to do that or play five. So Zach Fremantle can play the four and Jerome Hunter can come off the bench or what, however it's going to work. But there is going to need to be some sort of front court rotation there. If you look at what Xavier's got left over on the roster, you've obviously got, you know, Davion and Trey Green in the backcourt. And then Des Claude and Daylon Swain playing that kind of 3/wing role. I wouldn't be surprised if we go out and get a bona fide shooter, since we're losing the shooting from this year's team, essentially. I don't know that we're going to get another, you know, Quincy in the portal, but Sean Miller's 2 for 2 as far as guards who can shoot in his last couple years transferring in. I think we need to go out and get another shooter. If you're looking for Trey Green to be a breakout guy and be that dude, that'd be great. But I think we need more shooting just all around. I think Des Claude at Daylon Swain in that kind of wing position, maybe another rotation piece there wouldn't hurt you. But I feel like those guys pretty much have their spot set, that Des is going to start. He's going to be one of the main guys. And I think Daylon Swain is going to play an even bigger role next season, probably not as a starter, but probably first guy off the bench, and just see him continue to develop in that role.
Yeah, I would think that the priority, if I was looking at it, which I am, but I'm not being paid to, would be another forward. Xavier has had contact with a lot of players in the portal so far. A couple, I think, who would be really, really good pickups. Well, the first is Maxime Reyno from Stanford, who I think would be a good pickup for any team in the country because he scored 19 points a game last year and is 7'1". He can step out and shoot it, gets it done on the glass at both ends. Yeah, I mean, if Xavier gets this guy, he's probably the closest thing to Jack Nungi out of what I've seen available. And, I think, you know, Xavier could have used Jack Nungi this year. Anyway, the other guy, DJ Burns is another one from, Youngstown State Xavier's had contact with. Xavier is getting a visit from Josh Cohen, who is a transfer from UMass. He is a grad transfer. This would be his second transfer, but he has another year of eligibility due to the COVID year. So he's a grad transfer. He is a really good offensive rebounder. He's an efficient post-up scorer and, you know, does a decent job on the defensive glass and blocking shots, things like that. So either of those guys I think would be a good fit. I don't know. I mean, Xavier has offered some big time shooters in the portal. I think Makai Mason from Rice would be an interesting person to look at, especially because Quincy Oliveri quote tweeted when it was announced he was coming into the portal and said, "Come to Xavier, bro." So, but if you look at what Xavier has coming back, in theory, you have McKnight, you have Claude, Green, and Swain. And with John Powell coming in, I think you could probably put together a pretty good rotation of wings and guards from just those guys. If you can add another really, really good shooter, like Connecticut did when they got Cam Spencer, I think that is, again, going to put you over the top toward not just being a good team, but potentially being a great team. So, but yeah, I think, my priority, if I was putting the roster together, would be to get another big man, to compensate for the fact that Fremantle and Hunter probably, you want to protect them a little bit, because of their injury histories. So anyway, the time has come. We have announced Xavier Player of the Week throughout the year. And the time has come to reveal the results of those. And it's going to shock no one. The winner of the Xavier Player of the Week standings is Quincy Oliveri. Brad, I mean, last year, the winner of Xavier's Player of the Week standings was Zach Fremantle, but there was some debate as to whether he was Xavier's Player of the Year. You know, he could have gone Colby Jones, could have gone Sule Boom, who made All-American teams, could have gone Jack Nungy. You went Adam Tunkel because you didn't care about the numbers. You cared about how they made your heart feel. Is Quincy Oliveri Xavier's Player of the Year this year?
Yeah. Generally, I would say that anybody who scores more than 40 points in a game is going to have a leg up in that unless they're just incompetent the rest of the time. And while Quincy, I think it's fair to say, struggled down the stretch, he was still the guy for Xavier. Every bit as much what he did off the court as what he did on the court, but he was an excellent player. You look at Xavier's three-point percentage for the year was 160th in the nation at 34.2%, and Quincy shot 41%. So to give you some idea, he was basically the outside threat. Teams figured that out near the end of the year, that none of the guys were going to score inside the arc, and really made life difficult for him, and he still did an excellent job with the amount that he shot and how well he still shot. I think the only other player with an argument, well, I think there's probably two other players with arguments. One just kind of gets lost in the shuffle. The second place, not necessarily in our rankings, well, actually in our rankings, was Davion McKnight. And I think that he's the other guy who has a really good argument. But he is so quietly effective that he just never really seems to jump off the page at you. But he was excellent this year. His offensive efficiency was just a point and a half lower than Quincy's. And he shot 37% behind the arc, was nails at the line, hardly ever turned the ball over, had a great season. And, yeah, I don't know if I've ever seen somebody have so good of a season with so little fanfare around it. You just kind of stuck him out there, knew he was going to be good, and moved on. Des Claude was the most improved player in the Big East and the most improved player on Xavier, but he finishes a distant third, I think, behind those two guys, in Xavier's Player of the Year rankings. That may not be the case next year as he keeps getting better, but I'd go Quincy, McKnight, then Claude. You guys got anything different on that?
No, that's real brave of you though. The three guys that routinely combined, to score, you know, probably 90% of the team's points, you put them as the three most important players. That's pretty bold. Way to get out on a limb there.
What do you want from me here? Like, did you want me to say Trey Green?
No, you're correct. I just wanted to make fun of you for a second. So I did. I think, like you said, you can't say enough good things about Quincy. His off the court going to, you know, eat lunch with elementary school kids and passing out nuggets at Chick-fil-A. To kind of loop it back to the questions about the portal, if it's difficult to make a bond with players, it can be for sure. I mean, we've had some one-year guys at X that, you know, aren't Quincy's personality. He's obviously got a big personality and a big heart, and I think he really, you know, endeared himself to everybody in the one season so they can I feel like the fan base connected with him, even though the season didn't go well. He's still, I don't know if Xavier legend is the term, but he's definitely going to be, you know, a fan favorite for years down the line, especially when he, you know, punked UC in the shootout, dropped 43 in a game, hit some very big shots for us and everything. Yeah, I mean, Quincy was definitely the player of the year. I agree with Brad that Davion McKnight is kind of the, it's weird to say unsung hero on a sub 500 team. But he did a lot of great things. I was really happy to see him, you know, tweet out that he was coming back. And then John Rothstein reported that he was coming back about 2 days after that. So good on you, John. I think Davion McKnight is the best left-handed point guard in the Big East. And I don't think it's particularly close. Is there another left-handed point guard? No, nobody cares, Tyler Kolek. But yeah, Davion had a great season. I think Des Claude, you know, for all the grief he got, he made tremendous strides this year. Maybe not so much in his jump shooting ability, but there's no question he was a much better player, much bigger role. And I mean, at times he carried the team, despite not being able to shoot very well. So yeah, I made fun of Brad for picking the three guys that routinely combined to score 90% of the team's points. And then I just talked about those three guys. So yeah, there we go. Quincy Oliveri, player of the year. I don't think it's much of a debate.
I've got a scalding hot take here. First of all, did John Rothstein actually tweet that news, or did he just tweet like Davion McKnight, you know, tougher than 20 grit sandpaper or something stupid?
So what happened was Davion had commented on KY Muskie's post and said, I'm coming back. Yeah. And then Rothstein 2 days later was like, I spoke with Davion McKnight. He said he's coming back to Xavier. And then, oh my gosh, the comment section on that was hilarious. The Big East Barroom guys were in there giving him grief. Everybody from Xavier was giving him grief. Like, yeah, we knew this 2 days ago, you nerd.
Ugh. Yeah. I was having, I don't think it was with either of you guys, but I think I could probably believably run John Rothstein's Twitter account with him having no input for like a month before anyone realized it wasn't actually John Rothstein, because, you know, you just have to copy and paste. Anyway, my hot take is Quincy Oliveri, Xavier Player of the Year. Second place, Davion McKnight. No. One thing I'll say for Davion, because everybody has talked a lot about Quincy, he deserves it. But in Xavier's season, they, you know, they played 34 games. He only had an O rating under 100, which is average, six times. So essentially, you knew that you were going to get at least average, perhaps great, from Davion. Very rarely did he go out there and lay an egg. Quincy had nine such games, three of which were Xavier's last three games of the season, when it became kind of obvious his legs were starting to go and other teams knew that they didn't have to guard any of our post players. So I think there's something to be said for Davion's consistency this year. He never, well, not never, only six times did he go out there and put up an absolute dud. And you talk about Quincy punking Cincinnati in the shootout, which he did, but Davion had 20 that game and was 8 of 8 from the line, 4 assists, 1 turnover, and he had 3 steals and 8 defensive rebounds. So that's not a bad showing by any means. I love this dude. Just a peek behind the curtain here. When the transfer portal was going on last year, Quincy Oliveri was one of the guys I really wanted Xavier to get. When I read that Xavier was getting a visit from Davion McKnight, I was like, I hope it's like a friend visit, because I don't want him. And I could not have been more wrong. I think he was sensational for Xavier this year. So yeah, Quincy Oliveri, player of the year, but I think Davion McKnight deserves his flowers, because I think he was Xavier's most consistent player throughout the season and had his fair share of highlights as well. So anyway, that is it for us. Wrapping up Xavier's season, we'll be back with you guys throughout the offseason as the transfer portal continues portaling. Xavier, like we said, is in there. They are trying to find the missing pieces to get themselves back into the NCAA tournament and back in contention for a Big East title. So as that develops, we will continue to be with you guys. Thank you guys so much for listening, and we will catch you later. We'll be right back.